And, you know, having known a few people that have gone to jail, and some of the horrific stories around even just food. Well, Michael, especially. He couldn't get his mom's bolognese sauce in jail when he was there. That's for sure.
I know. It's a tough time to get it smuggled in. They check. Man. Contraband.
I mean, that would probably make it through the body imaging scan. Hello, and welcome to episode number 144 of the High Level Showdown. My name is Elliot Tanti. We are part of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB, and I am here with my good friends, Michael and Sharon.
A few weeks ago, we had a number of puns on dairy products. So I think the challenge for today is going to be, how many puns can we make on pot and weed? So let's see. Let's see if we can come up with any. But yes, Elliot indicated from the top of the high level showdown, because we're recording today, October 17th, 2018, a historic day in Canada, because cannabis, marijuana, pot, weed, Mary Jane, whatever you like to call it, is now legal in this country.
Wacky tobacco, Michael. You can't forget wacky tobacco.
So yes, it is official. It is legal to smoke, to ingest this substance, and obviously it's very significant in a number of ways. So we're going to try and sift through the cloud of smoke of this very contentious topic, and see what it means for Canada moving forward.
Sharon, what do you think about the legalization of marijuana?
I think it's a great move. I think we're part of progress. I think people will look back years from now and see, wow, Canada was on the forefront of doing something progressive and something that has lasting effects and impact on many people's lives. I don't think we're going far enough in legalization. We'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure. But in general, I'm into it. I'm into it.
Well, yeah, let's point out that Canada becomes not only the second country in the world to fully legalize, that's the other one is Uruguay. Some American states have legalized it, but that's on a state-by-state basis. And there's many countries in the world that have decriminalized it. But for full legalization, it stands at two, Canada and Uruguay.
We out here.
It's funny, I was thinking today and just reading some of the articles around cannabis, and I kind of got sick of all the coverage around it, so I was looking for unique and kind of different perspectives and things to be thinking about. No, but there is this emerging belief that this will put Canada in a really good position as the world starts to move in this direction with regards to having businesses already set up, cultivation ready to go. And perhaps, exporting marijuana could be the new chief export for Canada. Can you imagine that? Anyway, I think that's an interesting, dynamic to this as well. All in all, I thought the whole what's going to happen on Wednesday conversation was so over the top. And as we saw,
it was so
doomsday type
of
thing,
it was like very just chill and relaxed. It was not a lot of things were different, right?
Yeah, it was the same as always. So, I think that's probably what we're going to see. Obviously, there's still some questions. Some of the concerns that some people said is, again, like, how are police and law enforcement actually going to test for how high someone is? What is the education going out to all people about driving under the influence? Those kinds of questions are still kind of unclear for a lot of people. Even though the government has done a lot of work to try to educate, I think there still needs to be more education done and clearer rules. Obviously, we know the science isn't 100% yet. So there's still some questions that need to be answered. But in general, I think it's kind of easy breezy.
I mean, one of the conversations that I think is worth having is, and it's an extension of sharing the topic I know you want to bring, is the result of the legalization of marijuana or cannabis. I should just say the right term. Cannabis.
Well, they're all correct.
Yeah, I guess. Is that the crimes and the punishment for those crimes have significantly increased, and the regulation has become quite strict around the use of cannabis. Mm-hmm. So even, I think a very small example is here in Edmonton, it's impacted where people can smoke in front of public doors. So now it's 10 meters away.
Yeah.
And how the example goes with driving as well, too. There's a strict expectation that zero tolerance at all. And so on one side of it, yes, it's legal and you can use it in your homes and within those areas. But how are those increased toughness and regulations going to impact people as well?
For sure. And I think for now, the key message that we've heard is that they're going to go more for education at first rather than enforcing the rules, as people are still getting used to what can be done. I think, I don't know if I talked about it on the show, but I think Edmonton City Council's kind of extremist approach to the bylaws was stupid. increasing regulation extremist. When something is being legalized is done. So the whole 10 meters rule, of course, that was for weed and cigarette smoke. Now there's little designated areas, things like that. I think creating those kinds of things, I don't know if that's going to help the case. I think it makes people really frustrated who might have been on board with cannabis, looping it all in with cigarette smokers. I think it makes it even more challenging for people, for it to become a social norm, having these like weird areas. So even in Edmonton here, like White Ave, pretty much you can't smoke on White Ave anywhere.
Yeah.
There's little smoking areas on different parts of that area. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I can't imagine that. I guess maybe there'll be people crowded around there smoking all the time. I know there were, I think they said 3 people went out at midnight to one of the designated smoking zones this morning to smoke there. But it's kind of inconvenient.
Yeah, and I think that those sorts of rules and regulations are the ones that disproportionately affect marginalized and homeless populations the most as well, too. And I think that that's an important question as well. I mean, I've heard rumors that there's actually an unwritten kind of code or bylaw around shopping carts not being allowed on the Ave as well, too. So how do we treat that space? And how do those sorts of regulations and rules disproportionately impact For certain sure. types of people?
And then there's a question, of course, about what about the people who have been charged with the crime of possession. So right now, 30 grams is the maximum amount of cannabis that you can have on your possession.
Yeah.
And right now, 30 grams is punishable by a fine of up to $1,000 and 6 months in jail. And so the question is, what happens to the people who either have been convicted and charged of this crime, people who are currently sitting in jail, people who have these on their records? What happens to them? They now live in a world where the crime that they were put away for, the crime that they're charged with and that is on their record, is now legal in our country.
Well, the government did indicate today that there was going to be pardons, but I mean, I would assume, of course, that's going to be on a case-by-case basis, right?
Yeah.
And since this has been illegal for so long, you know, I would assume, again, that there is a backlog of these convictions that need to be reviewed.
For sure. Yeah. And it's a really tricky case. Good point, Michael. Mm-hmm. So you can get pardons after a certain amount of time, but it's actually pretty expensive to get a pardon, and it also takes a long time. And so right now they're saying, well, we're not going to... The quote, I think, was it's very difficult for the federal government to just pardon all these crimes.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I mean, is it that difficult? You're gonna, but I don't know. I mean, I find it hard to believe. And so they're saying maybe we'll streamline the pardon process or make it a little easier. And I'm like, what does that even look like? And I think it's a cop-out. I think it's BS that there are people, overly represented, of course, by Indigenous people in our criminal justice system, that are sitting there who have this on their record, or who are out and maybe have difficulty finding jobs, or, you know, whatever it may be, because of something that is legal. And I think there should be, I know Jagmeet Singh called for blanket pardons. Let's just get rid of all these convictions. And I think there should be. It sounds dramatic, but why not?
I mean, it's nice to see Jagmeet come out and say something. I think, like,
yes.
Sharon, I agree with you on the whole. If you have simply just one conviction around, you know, intent to distribute, it should be just like a blanket pardon. But I think that this gets into a larger question around, well, generally, it's not just a marijuana possession charge, right? There's other things that are associated with that as
For
well.
For sure.
Whether you be drunk disorderly, or you were, and I think this will be an example for a lot of people, and this is a conversation that needs to be had, is were you caught smoking marijuana while you were driving as well, too?
So now you have,
now you have an impaired driving and you know, a cannabis charge too. Should that person be part of that blanket pardon as well too? Because that would still necessarily be illegal today. So I agree with you on the whole. Well,
which is why these cases have to be analyzed case by case.
Yeah, that's why
we can't have a blanket pardon. I guess not
because
expunge the criminal records.
Sharon just wants like
possession,
the purge.
If I'm not saying expunge all their criminal records, but if someone has a possession charge, obviously I think driving under the influence, whatever it may be, but I think simple possession, get rid of it.
Yeah I think that that's well,
which
fair
is
as well
I think what is going to happen, right?
I for don't the know. Simple, they seemed a little shifty about their ability to actually do that.
Yeah.
I can see it getting backlogged. I can see them being like, this is so difficult, we don't know the process of how to do this. Them being like, oh, it's so tricky, yada yada yada, and them dragging their feet around this. Because imagine the dialogue. Oh, the Trudeau liberals are setting criminals free. They're lax on crime.
Well,
you can see Andrew Scheer and
now
his
cronies. Now we have hot and criminals.
Yeah, spinning this.
So I can see this is the room, this is the game all along. So, legalized cannabis so that he can let out criminals.
Yeah.
I think that's a good segue, Sharon, to the political consequences of this.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. Obviously, we're a year off from the federal election, and for the Liberals, this is largely a win, right? This is a big check mark.
If only they could have pushed it closer to the election.
Sure, but I mean, regardless, it's a platform plank that they ran on and delivered, unlike some other things that they failed to deliver on. So from that point of view, there's a check mark. But, you know, you mentioned Andrew Scheer. What are the what are the criticisms against him let's face it. Sure, there's many Canadians tonight that are celebrating and very happy. But come on, let's also realize that there's many Canadians that are not happy about this and think that this is a wrong decision. And, you know, could this legalization cost him a vote in the next election?
Like a vote or the vote?
Okay, sure, both.
Yeah, you're right, you said it. There's going to be people that are not going to like this. I mean, Jean Chrétien was out there saying, you never touch this stuff and you never plan to use it. Like, you're not going to, you know, there's those individuals. There's a certain generation of people that are, like, over the age of 65 or 70 that aren't going to like this. And, yeah, I mean, I think you're gaining a lot more votes than you're losing on the whole, in the sense that there's people that are apathetic that maybe would say, hey, that was something, you know, he ran on and came through on, and maybe my vote does matter and I'll continue to vote. There's people that have been calling on this for years and years and years, particularly in BC, that see this as a major victory. I mean, there's harm reduction specialists and doctors and nurses that are saying, like, this is the next step in the longer journey of decriminalization of all drugs. So I think that it's a positive win for Justin Trudeau, and I think he's picking up different people, whereas Andrew Scheer, it would be picking up people that traditionally just vote for conservatives anyway.
Yeah,
and I think they have hinted that they're not going to reverse it. I mean, what a headache, right? Trying to reverse it. Like, it's done now.
Yeah.
There's no going back in terms of...
Oh, you couldn't. No, of course.
No, and so I don't think they're going to make much fuss about it. They might say, oh, we'll wait and see what the impact is, but... I think it would be more of a loss for Andrew Scheer if they made a fuss about it than if they...
Well, they'd probably make fuss about certain details, and if they were elected, I'm sure there would be changes to POC law, not repealing, but... I could certainly see a conservative government changing things.
I mean,
things.
The other thing about this too, Michael, though, is that this is largely a provincial issue. Like, the federal government makes it legal, but then administration is at the provincial level.
You know, case in point, in Ontario, Doug Ford saying there are only going to be online sales of pot until spring. The new government in Quebec said they're raising the age to 21.
Mm-hmm.
So it is and you're right. And
it'll just like alcohol, how you go from province to province. It's a little different, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit harder for Andrew Scheer to take a shot at Justin Trudeau for the way things were rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
Other than basically timeline and how long it took,
mm-hmm.
You could talk about consultation, but I mean, they've been consulting on this from the beginning too.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be good for, there's going to, there is big
great for the
weed business being built in Canada, and that's great the for revenue, pastry. Yeah. And,
oh, for sure. And especially in the provinces where they tie it up with the province the same how alcohol is, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's tons of money in this as well, too. And, I mean, obviously we're not going to see the benefits of taxation in this fiscal period, but I think that that will also – that might have an impact on the politics.
Hey, Jason Kenney, this is a way to balance the budget.
Get into big weed.
Get into big weed. Well, you know, Alberta can become the top producer of cannabis in the country. Look at that.
Yeah, what's like I just see cannabis plant next to wheat.
I mean, as the environment starts to get a lot more volatile, look, the farmers had a bad season this year. What if they all became cannabis producers?
A side agro business.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this, guys? Have we kind of beat this one to death? Are we all sick of talking about this and just get back to
normal? I'm just over it. Like, it won't change my day-to-day life in any way.
Oh, sure.
I
Michael, you've been in prison 3 times for marijuana use, so why don't you tell me about how this is going to impact you?
It's funny. You know, we talked about the convictions. I have to start applying for those pardons.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm going to need some help filling out that form. So
okay.
I know I got
help you out.
2 people that can help me. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
3 convictions, 3 forms. I think we can figure this out.
Well, it's kind of cool. It's a historical day.
It is historic, yeah. I think, you know, certainly, as you said, Canada is leading the way. I mean, of course, again, there's many people that aren't happy. But I think even if you agree or don't agree, it's impressive to say that Canada took on this file and implemented it. You know, they went through with it and obviously without, you know, most
a
of
blueprint.
The... blueprint. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you would have got info from the rest of the other countries, but it's only one other one, Uruguay, so not too much. And what about Elliot? You're the sage on
well,
this.
Well, having
you?
Just tried
you
marijuana,
you are
the
expert.
The, yeah. Having been used marijuana for the first time in my life just today. I think it's generally
even your mom
fine.
Who's listening doesn't even believe that. Like,
what's a financial institution doing producing a podcast? It's simple. With over 300 branches and agencies located throughout Alberta, they are uniquely positioned to shine a light on the treasure trove of untold stories in the farthest corners of the province. Every month, join host and ATB economist Nick Ford as he explores Alberta's geography, its businesses, organizations, and its diverse and fascinating people, all viewed through an economic lens. We are Alberta, an ATB podcast. Check them out on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so staying with the federal government and legislation, they also announced this week, the Minister of Public Safety, Ralph Goodale, announced that there's going to be changes to the prison system in Canada, specifically around the imprisonment of prisoners who are in solitary confinement. So that practice seems to be coming to an end. Of course, you know, we've seen it in movies many times, you know, like only the really bad guys get the solitary confinement and they're in that cell that's in the dark and they're just totally shut off from human contact and punished. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's really that extreme as it's showed in the movies, but certainly the type, you know...
It might be worse.
Might be worse.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, solitary confinement, I mean, that it says it all, right? You're not only you're confined, but you're alone. You're deprived of, obviously, human interaction. And some will say, well, that's appropriate for certain criminals, and that's what they get. But the government of Canada is now saying that they are reviewing that practice. And so certainly very, you know, we've mentioned progressivism about the legalization of pot. And this seems, again, to be sort of a progressive viewpoint to, you know, the role of jails and prisons.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it is a really great move, again, on my opinion. So I think it doesn't go far enough, and I will always say that. But so for, I think it's a good point. First of all, I think that might be a myth as well to people that only the really bad people, so like the most hardened, whatever, mass murderers go into solitary confinement. A lot of times people who are put in solitary confinement are people who might have certain mental health issues or behavioral disorders years, whatever, that the prison system finds it hard to manage, or they don't know, there aren't enough resources to be able to give that person proper to support. And so a lot of those people also go into solitary confinement, not just, you know, really scary, scary bad people. And so the new...
Like Elliot.
Yeah. So the new proposed...
All right, watch yourself. There's three cannabis convictions over there.
So the new proposed rejigging of solitary confinement says that people who are in solitary confinement will get a mandated 4 hours outside of their cell and every day, and 2 hours of meaningful human interaction. And so this is just a way to alleviate some of the horrible things that we see happening in solitary confinement. And there's been many stories about it. I mean, there was one, and I forgot her name, I'll check in a little bit, of a woman or a young girl who actually spent more than 15 days in solitary confinement, and she ended up hanging herself in her cell while guards watched, but they had specific instructions not to intervene. So they didn't go in to save this person's life, because for whatever reason she had been deemed as, you know, either a super aggressive or, you know, I mean, that's horrible to watch someone die like that.
Yeah.
And because of our laws said that those guards wouldn't be able to go in. So I think, I mean, this is a great move, and I think like you said, Michael, it brings into question what the role of prisons are,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this is going to be an ongoing debate.
Oh, for sure.
Country forever, right? Is it rehabilitation or is it punishment?
Sorry to cut off. I would say, in my view, it should be both, right?
Yeah.
Ideally, the prison would be both. It's a punishment, of course.
But I think that both sides would say that it is both. But there's a side that leads more towards punishment as a reason why people that will lower recidivism rates. That's not actually the case. But, you know, so I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I think I agree with you, Sharon. This is fundamentally really important to... another way that Canada can differentiate itself and actually move towards other countries with regards to how they deal with criminals. I think that this was, and forgive me if you've mentioned this, but it was triggered by two really unfavorable recent legal cases involving mistreatment of people or individuals or just human rights in general in regards to the use of solitary confinement as a punishment tool. I think that we are getting closer, but not quite there. Mm-hmm. And frankly, there's a lot more work that needs to be done by this Liberal government with regards to justice and evening things out. I hope this is the first step in what are a number of different changes, because we also had promises in the last election around mandatory minimums and the removal of that. And, you know, again, a push towards... Mm-hmm. And another thing that's been an issue this week was healing lodges as well, and that type of behavior. Or program as a way to amend behavior. So there's lots more questions left on this, but as you said, good start.
Right? Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And this bill C-83 had a few other great things in it. So trying to introduce technology to scan bodies so that...
It's actually called body scanning technology.
Body scanning technology. Simple. There we go. Rather than having the guards
body
scan actually
imaging technology.
Body scan imaging technology. So that's hoping to reduce the abuse that happens in prisons. There was some stuff about supportive health care in prisons for people who are in there. And so there was a couple of other things that were really progressive.
Patient advocacy services.
Yeah,
too.
So I think really fantastic. Mm. Although I groaned and rolled my eyes, the conservative public safety critic, Pierre-Paul Huss, said, This is bad news.
Yeah.
He said it's softening the law to make prison time easier for criminals, is what Pierre said.
And yeah. Well, you know, the conservatives are always tough on crime agenda.
Are we gonna transition to the politics on this now? Because I have lots to say. Michael,
I was gonna say it fits into that tough on crime agenda, right? So that's prime fodder to pounce on for the Tories. So no surprise there.
I mean, look, we have countless examples, countless studies, hard evidence that one, solitary confinement does not lead to a change in behavior by inmates. Two, that anytime someone goes into jail, unless they have proper supports, mental health supports, health supports, and then start to work towards being re-entering into society, the more supports that they have, the more the less likely they are to commit another crime and end up back in jail too. And I think that we've gone beyond the argument that Michael and I, you know, tried to define earlier around what is punishment versus rehabilitation.
Yeah.
And we have to just get, like, prisoners still need to be treated with dignity and respect.
Of course, they're humans,
and they have human rights. Yeah. I mean, they're, some of their rights have been limited, and that's a part of this. But you need a minimum standard in which for people to live in, like, in order to be alive and healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, having known a few people that have gone to jail, and some of the horrific stories around even just food. Well, Michael, especially. He couldn't get his mom's bolognese sauce in jail when he was there. That's for sure.
I know. It's a tough time to get it smuggled in. They check. Contraband.
I mean, that would probably make it through the body imaging scan, though.
Ew.
Anyway. But yeah, just like the stories I've heard around the food and access to health care and mental health services. I mean, how do you get better in those sorts of situations? It's really hard to imagine that. And then if you're not, you know, going through some sort of change, you're going to reoffend because you don't see that as an issue, right? Anyway, that's sort of my first kind of two takes on it.
Yeah. And so, I was just going to press Elliot further. You said about the political consequences.
Well, I mean, that was my kind of guarded way of saying the conservatives are not acting rationally.
Hold on. Now, we, in the pot discussion, we talked about, are they going to repeal pot? Likely not.
Yes.
Is this a type of thing that the conservatives would overturn?
I definitely so. I mean, conservatives always get a lot of good press, and that's kind of, you know, playing to their base a lot of times. We know every single time Stephen Harper was very much a tough on crime, you know, one strike you're out sort of guy. And so a lot of times conservative governments do use this kind of rhetoric and these kinds of things to be able to gain good favor from people who they think they vote for them. So I think of the couple of things that we've talked about tonight, I think this is something that you could see a conservative government weakening. Hopefully that isn't the case, but as a bill, they definitely could.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish conservatives took as seriously their feelings of the need to defend rights across all the boards. And, you know, one's right to choose and opportunity and life and liberty. I mean, it's such bullshit. And when that's the case that for so many things around taxation or education or healthcare, but then when
free
it comes
trade.
To or free trade, but when it comes to the questions around the dignity and respect of people who have committed offenses in our country, all of a sudden that just disappears. That to me, I think, is incredibly infuriating. But as you said, it's a vote getter. It's a lot easier to be tough on crime
when showing humanity.
You know, what's the conservative line now that they use on this? They're just looking out for the rights of victims right now.
Yeah.
You know, like that. That's their new language around these sorts of issues, and it certainly has had, I think, it always works. There's a base, and there's a conservative base that, I would never commit a crime, and I don't know anyone that's committed a crime, and so
and that sort of,
I don't care about that.
The us and them sort of, you know,
terminology,
like, oh, well, you support the criminal. If you don't support victims, you must support the criminal.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is obviously, you know, terrible to say such
not
a thing,
true.
You know.
And you know what? I do. I do support the person who's committed the crime. I obviously, it's wrong. It shouldn't have happened. But you have to support that person. Otherwise, they're going to reoffend. And it's more likely to be someone I know if there's more crime.
Of course.
I mean,
course.
If the goal is to be tough on crime, make evidence-based policy decisions and stand up for evidence-based policy decisions. Being tough on crime is not raising mandatory minimums, is not making living conditions in prisons worse, and is not in favor of solitary confinement, in my mind.
Yeah.
Otherwise is a partner podcast of the Alberta Podcast Network. It features artists, activists, youth, and civically engaged Edmontonians who want to share diverse stories of communities living on Treaty 6 territory. Go to albertapodcastnetwork.com to learn more about Otherwise and listen now. All right. So I feel like for the past few weeks, I've been rolling this in, Michael. Yeah. I feel like I've taken your
If you don't want to do it, I can do it. But you've been doing fine.
Oh, thank you.
You've been doing fine. So all right. I'll leave it up to you, Sharon.
Thank you, Michael. I feel like it's such an honor. So, of course, it is that time of show where we head down south and talk about what's happening in Cheeto Land. It is... Okay, so like I announced last week... We are doing a special midterm coverage leading up to Midterm Tuesday Super Califabralicious. I really want a name. March Madness. That's what I said. No, Midterm Madness.
Midterm Madness.
Because it's not March.
Yeah.
It's November. Well, it will be. All right. So, Midterm Madness. When we hopefully will see... some seats flipping in the States. And so this week, we're actually going to look at some interesting...
Seats flipping.
Seats flipping. So we're about to look at a race that isn't necessarily... It's not as close, I guess, as the one we talked about last week. But this week, the race we're highlighting is something that brings awareness to some crappy things that are happening in terms of voters' rights in the States. And so this, we're going to North Dakota, and this is the Senate race. And so as we know, the Senate's going to be a lot harder to flip than the House of Representatives. But this is a race between Heidi Heitkamp, the Democrat, and Kevin Cramer, who's the Republican. And Heidi is the incumbent. Right now, the race is looking 2 in 3 chances that a Republican wins. But the reason why North Dakota, this Senate race, has been making the news is because of a recent Supreme Court ruling about voter ID laws. So the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe took a case all the way to the Supreme Court. And what the law said is that voters have to present identification that includes a current residential street address if they want to vote in this year's midterm elections. And so a lot of people will say, okay, what's the big deal? Like, you know, your address. The thing is that Native Americans can live on the reservation without an address. This is something that has happened for many years from their laws and their treaties. And most people who do live on reserves use P.O. boxes and those sorts of things to get their mail. And this is an official statement from the Standing Rock chairman Mike Faith. Mm-hmm. And so what happens now in these midterms is that people who might have even just voted in the primaries without their without an address or past elections will now go to the voting station and find out that, oh, you can't vote. A lot of people say this is a way to strip Democrats of voting rights.
It absolutely is. Not a lot of people are saying that this is a clear brazen attempt by the Republicans to have Democrats not vote.
I mean, yeah, because, you know, historically, Native Americans vote Democrat. And so this is a shit show, obviously, because it means that most people who live on reserves in North Dakota and all across the United States will not actually be able to vote in the midterms because they don't have addresses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doubly frustrating is that this is like a direct consequence of Donald Trump being president and the two justices that he's just put into the Supreme Court.
Yes.
I mean, this is sort of exactly
and,
what
you, Kavanaugh, yeah.
and Kavanaugh. You, yeah. This is what you will come to expect more and more and more and more. A clear and brazen attempt by Republican lawmakers to limit the access to voting booths for people of a different political belief than their own, and a United States Supreme Court that will support them in doing that.
What's sad is that this is an age-old practice, right? You voter suppression. What makes it tragic is not so much that it's been done in the past, which obviously is bad, but it's tragic because it's 2018 and this is happening.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, this is not the age of Andrew Jackson, you know, and the 19th century, power hungry Indian removal. This is 2018, and the fact that this is showcasing itself as a, you know, another evidence that America, you know, and obviously Canada and much of the world, but in this instance, America has a long way to go in relations with the minorities and the democratic system, yeah. Frankly.
And this is something actually, and it sounds bizarre, and I think that most people don't realize how bad voter suppression is in the states. So it's not just happening in North Dakota, it's happening in states all across the country. In Georgia, a report actually found that the Republican Secretary of State there, Brian Kemp, and his office got rid of 53,000 voter registration applications. And they're saying this is effectively suppressing the minority vote because nearly 7 in 10 of those 53,000 belong to African Americans. 7 in 10. And so this is something that they're saying, oh, we're just cleaning it up. We're just cleaning up the list and things like that. But they're actually finding that there's lots of discrepancies in the way that they were clearing out these records. And it seems like a systematic approach to try to strip people who they think are going to vote Democrat, who are most likely minorities, from voting. And so this is something, mm-hmm. of course, with the new Supreme Court ruling directly affecting Native American individuals, is something that's happening all across the country and which is going to severely affect the ability for people to vote in the midterms. And I think that's terrible.
I mean, when I was in Iowa last year, it was so terrible that there was an individual there who was a campaign coordinator. So he was running an actual campaign headquarters in Iowa. He was very invested in the Democratic Party. It was because of the restrictions around mail-in balloting in Texas, he wasn't going to be able to vote. And this is someone who is so passionate. A young guy wants to get into politics. At that time, thought maybe there was a Washington job waiting for him after the election. And to see that he couldn't even vote, and he just sort of accepted it. It's just, for lots of people, I will mention he's also a person of color, so imagine that. Yeah. There's another piece of this as well. Sharon is so right. I saw it firsthand, and I was completely flabbergasted by this. That's also in addition to the fact that there are many states in the United States in which if you have a felony charge, you're not allowed to vote as well, too. Which is...
That's absurd.
Actually, Iowa was one of them, and
you
spoke to at least...
You are a citizen of this country. How can you not vote? That is the basic right of a citizen.
You know, it's funny. They're tying into things we just talked about, you know, prisoners. And how long were they denied the vote?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and now, of course, prisoners can vote, right?
Yes. And they should. Yeah. I mean, and to think about how the definition of a quote-unquote felony has expanded in the last 20 years and the impact.
Freaking jaywalking.
You know, a felony assault, you know, charge, right? Yeah. And, you know, I talked to 5 or 6 registered Democrats who said I would love to vote for Hillary when I was in Iowa.
Yeah.
But Iowa, you're not allowed to vote if you have a felony record conviction. And so they couldn't vote. So, and I think it's another
example. How long does that last for?
It's forever, for life.
And when you see the representation of people...
I think you could get a pardon.
But when we talk about felonies, I'm like even a small felony?
Yeah, as long as you get to that felony statute or that level, then
I didn't know that.
It's awful.
Yeah.
And who are the people who have the most felonies? Again, black and brown people.
No, poor people.
Marginalized people. This is just a way... Yeah, it's disgusting. I wish Heidi Heitkamp the best in her race. It's going to be a close one. And she is the incumbent, and she's very well liked, but a few things have counted her against her in the past few months. Number one being her voting no for Kavanaugh. So, fun fact about Heidi, she actually voted yes for Neil Gorsuch. She was one of the few Democrats who did that because North Dakota is a red state. And she has touted herself as someone who's able to go to Washington and negotiate with Donald Trump and, you know, not be partisan. And so now her opponent is using her no for Kavanaugh to say she is partisan. She doesn't want to negotiate. Heidi's standing her ground and saying, you know, it was a matter of conscience and what the values of what I thought was right based on his allegations. And so it's going to be interesting to see. They said she's very well liked, but the vote against Kavanaugh definitely gave her you know, step back in her.
But they're going to run that ad regardless. Oh, they're going to say that regardless, right? Like, this is the I guess, like, I understand how that, especially if you're talking about a really close election and close race, there's going to be people that are certainly impacted by that issue. But they're that Republican you're running against is going to run that ad anyway. So good for her for voting with her conscience and what she believes in. And frankly, if they can't take a run at you at that, for that, they'll take a run at you for something else and still call you as though, say you won't work with people alongside the other side of the aisle. So that's sort of my thinking around it. I guess we wait and see.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, you know, speaking of Kavanaugh, do you guys think that the Kavanaugh issue could be a decisive swing vote for Republicans? Obviously, you know, the idea that this was a Democratic conspiracy to block the Supreme Court judge, you know, we've heard that it sort of energized Republican the base and voters that
really got them hopped up. Yes. I think so. I think there's lots of spins that have been happening. They're seeing, oh, this is the danger of the Me Too movement, and this is a witch hunt, and, you know, really they're using it to kind of be like, this is Democrats gone wrong. This is leftist politics.
Well, the mob. You know,
the mob mentality. And so I think that's definitely... But at the same time, it just reaffirms the thoughts and the ideas and the values of these voters already. These were people who already thought the Me Too movement and, you know, survivors coming up and speaking out were full of shit. You know, they're the people who think Bill Cosby should be sitting comfortably in his home. So it's just like, I mean, these people weren't going to be... to be voting Democrat,
but maybe they will. Yeah, but maybe they wouldn't have necessarily. They wouldn't have voted Democrat, but maybe they wouldn't have voted.
I mean, I think that is the better question. This has been basically all political journalism all week, from all the politics podcasts that I listen to, everyone's having this conversation because the polls have turned in the direction of Republicans in the last 2 days, and so people are trying to, you know, suss out what
that
is.
Do you think
it'll
last, though?
But that's one of the questions. One of the questions is it even really this? And is it just because there's a normal flow in elections, and as you get closer to the date, things start to crystallize in people's minds? Part of it is... yeah, will this even last, or is this going to start moving towards something else as well, too? And I there's lots of disagreements around that. I generally, you know, point to the guys at 538 who are pollsters and analyze polls, and they seem to think that there is an impact here. But the question—it's not enough of an impact because the real question is educated women, white women, and those are that's the biggest divide in America right
boo!
Now that are likely to go. No, the educated.
Sorry,
ones,
I don't mean to boo white women.
You did, Sharon.
What was that?
So there's been a big shift between what Trump got and where those women are at now, and it's towards the Democrats.
We don't see. We don't see white women. We don't see. Okay.
Anyway, I'm not going to get into this with you, but
we don't see.
That is more of a defining group than Kavanaugh himself. I don't know. I mean, the other thing too is then Trump went on a tirade yesterday and said about like 18 newsworthy things, including calling a woman on Twitter a horse face.
Oh my God.
So
that's a nice
thing. I think
thing
Kavanaugh will be in the way in the rearview mirror before we get to the midterm election day.
52%
voted for Trump.
Yes. We gonna see.
Michael, what's your 780?
Oh, we're going 780.
Yes.
I'm going to start. Yes, I want to give a plug for a fellow podcast on the Alberta Podcast Network, and that is Putting It Together by Kyle Marshall. Kyle Marshall is actually a pretty prolific podcaster and online presence on YouTube, and he has a new show that's part of the Alberta Podcast Network called Putting It Together, where he discusses Stephen Sondheim, the prolific, he's also a prolific individual, the prolific lyricist and composer of just some of the great classic Broadway shows of the last 60 years. So what Kyle has done, he's undertaken a very ambitious project. He wants to go through every one of Stephen Sondheim's shows, song by song, and analyze the lyrics.
If there was ever a podcast
and
that was
music.
Right up your alley, Michael.
Yes, well, I'm leading to that. So, Kyle very graciously invited me on to his show, and so I was on the most recent episode that came out today, and I talked about West Side Story, the song,
ooh,
the song Tonight Quintet from West Side Story. And the other episodes that have come out before this, of course, have, as I was saying, he goes show by show, song by song in order. So far, this is all, he's released only West Side Story.
That's cool.
And so I have appeared today on talking about Tonight Quintet, and that's just the end of Act 1. So next week he's going to start Act 2 of West Side Story, and then he's going to move on to Gypsy, I think, is the next one. It's Stephen Sondheim's catalog. Anyway, so it was a great pleasure to Kyle. Thank you very much for inviting me. You can listen to my episode and the others that have been released. He's brought a number of interesting guests on, including Karen Unland, president of the Alberta Podcast Network, to talk about these shows, so far only West Side Story, and the genius of Stephen Sondheim. So thanks to Stephen Sondheim for his work, and thanks to Kyle Marshall for this very unique podcast project.
That is unique.
Very cool.
Pretty cool. So my 780 goes this week to an account on Instagram and Facebook that most of you have probably heard of, Humans of New York. And Brandon, the photographer behind it, travels now all around the world to take pictures and gather stories of regular people. So it started in New York, and now he goes all around the world, and he's done some incredible work. And right now he's in Rwanda, actually. And the series is following people known as the Rescuers. And so the Rwandan genocide happened 25 years ago, if you can believe it. Not that long ago when you think about it. And so the Rescuers are a group of the Hutu majority. So people in Rwanda who risked their lives to save the Tutsis as they were being murdered in this mass genocide. And so he's actually been able to track down some of these people who are known as the Rescuers and profile them. And it is just such a stunning campaign. And so it just started. He's only featured two people who are known as the Rescuers. Each of the stories are different about how these people have, you know, risked their lives and saved thousands of lives. So really encourage you to go and read these because it's fascinating, it's inspiring, it's, you know, harrowing in many ways, but really, really encourage you to read it and read other ones. And so, and just a plug as well, in most of the countries he goes to, when he profiles someone who it's very clear there's a financial need to support them in their lives or in their dreams or for their families, he actually has a fund now that people can donate to, and that money goes directly to the individuals that that he captures on his camera. So, you know, go support. Mm-hmm. If you read the stories, you'd be convinced to donate right away for sure. So that's Humans of New York.
Great, great.
Great, thanks, Sharon. Yeah. I've got a quick one, and Michael, I'm going to have to enlist you for your capacity to speak French for this one. Okay. But I'm all about a little bit of civil disobedience and, you know, being a little bit cheeky. I'm wearing a shirt right now that says fuck with the American flag in the middle of it, mm-hmm. and I yeah. like that kind of thing. I think it's when you can sneak it by, it's even better. And my 780 this week goes out to a woman I saw walking downtown with an umbrella, and in French it read,
"Merde, il pleut,"
which translates
it
to
"shit, it rained."
Shit, it rained. It's raining.
It's raining shit.
Yeah, or yeah. No, shit, it's raining, I think. Well, there.
Which oh, depends oh, what oh, oh I see. Okay, so oh shit, it's like it's raining.
Yes,
Merde,
yeah,
il pleut. Okay,
yeah. Which yeah. is funny. It's just it's a bad word. It's in another yeah. language. It made yeah. me smile, and she saw it made me smile, so she smiled too. And
yeah.
and I think that those are the best kind of pieces of you know, civil disobedience are the small, minute ones where you can make someone smile or, you know, catch someone and you know that you're thinking the same thing. You have a similar sense of humor or belief. So shout out to that young woman who made yeah. a very rainy day a lot brighter for me.
Yeah, you know, I just want to share a story that's, you know, kind of similar where I really got a good chuckle. A number of years ago at the Fringe Festival, there was a show called Fuck Stephen Harper. And actually, well, Stephen Harper was still the Prime Minister. And the artist was promoting his show, and he had a shirt that said, "Fuck Stephen Harper." And I remember seeing, as he was going around, this old woman who went up to him and said, "That's very offensive." And he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want me to cover up the offensive part?" And she's like, "Yes." And he covered up Stephen Harper.
Yeah. I love him.
But, yeah.
That's great. Michael, where can people get you?
Okay, I'm on Twitter, @MaestroMichael2.
I am at Sharon MBU.
I am at Tanti Yegg. We are at High Level Show.
Hit us up.
We're looking forward to next week. I don't know why.
Could be a special episode or, yeah. Good night.